The worst enemy of a teenager is confusion. Teenagers are naturally confused, biologically confused, because, as we've stated previously, a teenager is nishtahin and nishtaher, neither adult nor child. And that's a halacha. It's not just something that you're going to pick up in the self-help section of the Barnes & Noble bookstore. There's a halacha like that. Halacha is that a child under 13 is not punished for his sins because he's what we call in Lashon HaKodesh a katan. A person over 20 is punished for all of his sins. In the ages of 13 and 19 inclusive, he's half punished and half not. Beis Din will punish him, but bidei shemayim, he's not liable for his crimes. Which means that al pi din, a teenager, has a halacha of half adult and half child. Now that's enough to confuse anybody, particularly the teenager. Teenager wakes up one morning and he's feeling adulthood. He walks around strutting as if he was actually an adult. And then, in his daily encounters, he finds out, to his dismay, that he's still an immature baby. And it's not a contradiction. A teenager is an immature baby and a grown-up all rolled up into one. And if you think this is confusing to you, as a listener, me as I say these words, just imagine how confusing this is to the teenager, because that's what he is. And therefore, clarity, precision, and focus is the most important thing to supply a teenager with in order to counterbalance the natural confusion that a teenager experiences in his adolescent years. As a pasuk in Mishle, it goes like this: Choseich shivtoi soinei benoi. Somebody who spares the rod hates his child. If you withhold corporal punishment from your children and refuse to hit them, you hate your child. Now there are two perushim in this. Perush number one comes from the Malbim. That is, you actually hate your child if you don't physically punish him. Because the reason why you won't strike your child is because his pain is unbearable to you. You can't take to see him cry. You can't take to see him hurt. However, him being hurt or him being in pain in this particular instance is to his benefit. In other words, you are putting your own interests, that is your own good feelings, over the interests of your child. You care more about your feelings than your child's welfare. And that means you hate your child. Now, I'd also like to point out in Lashon HaKodesh, soinei doesn't necessarily mean hate the way it means in English. If you say you don't like somebody or you like somebody less than somebody else, sinna is also an appropriate word to use. When it says leisisnas achicha buvavecha, you shouldn't hate your friend in your heart, it doesn't only mean you shouldn't hate him. You look at the Ramban and in other Mefarshim, you'll find that it means you shouldn't harbor any criticisms or any claims against him in your heart. And so over here it means that if you refuse to hit your child because you can't bear to see him in pain. It means you are soine your child. It means you don't love him, you love yourself. Another pshat. And this comes from most of the Rishonim, that if somebody refrains from hitting his child, it doesn't mean that he hates his child, but it does mean that one day he will. Because a child who grows up without strong direction, and according to Shlomo HaMelech here, strong direction means punishment, is going to grow up to go off Letar Busro, and then you're going to end up hating him. So what it means is, if you withhold the rod, you will eventually come to hate your child. Now the pasuk continues. The oyhavoy, and somebody that loves his child, shicharoy musar, will give him a musar. Now musar comes from the same shayrish as the word yesurim. Musar means strong rebuke, as opposed to the Hebrew toichocho, which comes from the word hoichocho, which means direction, to prove something. Toichocho means you tell somebody, look, you're wrong, this is why. Musar means you scold him. Somebody who loves his child, shicharoi musar. Now, the word choseich over here means moinea, somebody who withholds. But Shlomo HaMelech did not use the word moinea, he used the word choseich, which needs an explanation. Now the explanation as to why Shlomo HaMelech used this particular word can be found in the style that Shlomo HaMelech uses throughout Mishlei. And when that style, that derech, is applied to this pasuk, it may shed a new light on what Shlomo HaMelech is trying to say. All over Mishlei, the majority of psukim, actually, Shlomo HaMelech uses a contrast between the Reisho Dikra and the Seifo Dikra. The first part of the Pasuk and the last part of the Pasuk. Reish v'koloin pireya musar. V'shoimer toichachas yichubad. Pireya musar is the opposite of shoimer toichachas. And koloin is the opposite of kovod. Katoim tirade fro. Yes, tzadikim yishalem toiv. Evil will follow sinners, or sinners will pursue evil. Yes, tzadikim yishalem toiv, but tzadikim will get their due reward. The Reisho Dikra is always in contrast to the Sefer Dikra. Now, this being the case, if we find an ambiguous word in either the Reisho Dikra or the Sefer Dikra, we can derive the meaning of the word by contrasting it with the other half of the pasuk. And there's something that seems very cute in this pasuk. And if Shlomo HaMelech would not have been the Chacham Mikol Adam, but rather a poetry writer, we would have taken a look at this pasuk and say, that's a cute vort, a cute play on words. But by Shlomo HaMelech, there's no such thing as a play on words. Choseich shivtoi. When it's talking about withholding the rod, it uses the word choseich. In the Sefer Dikra, v'oyhavoi shicharoi musar. The word shicharoi is contrasted with choseich. Now, shicharoi over here comes from the word shachar. Poshet Pshat in this context means Shicharoi Musar, means he makes the Musar clear like the day to the child. It's clear. It shines out. Meforshim, a different Pshat, that shicharoi comes from the word shachar, but it means the morning of the boy's life. Shicharoi musur means that at the beginning of his life, you bring him up, you raise him on musur. Shicharoi comes from the word shachar, meaning morning. Choseich, therefore, is the opposite of that. It's not just a play on words. He means to refer to the word choseich, which is the opposite of shachar. Shachar means to make something clear, then choseich, and over here, choseich, which is not a grammatic derivation, but rather a interpretive derivation based upon the contrast in the pasuk. Shlomo HaMelech means to say, if you hide the rod from your child, if he can't see it, that will cause you to eventually hate your child. Meaning, the punishment may be there. The repercussions for the child and the punishment of his deeds may actually be in effect. You hide it in undertones, in innuendo, and it's not clear to the child exactly what he's being punished for. You know, sometimes a child will do something wrong and the parents will decide for whatever reason not to make a big issue of it. But instead of making a big issue of it, they'll look at the child askance for a week. In their tone of voice, in their mannerisms towards the child, in their behavior, there are subtle differences due to the fact that they're angry at the child. And this anger is there, it's there and it's real. As real as any flap of the rod. But it's hidden. It's not clear to the child, it's clouded and blurred by the parents acting as if they're not interested in punishing the child. That's a choseich shivtoi, somebody that hides the rod. Soinei benoi will come to hate his child. And we see it all the time. Often, when parents or children will come to me, when there's trouble in the home, and the parents will say that we're very liberal with the child in terms of punishing him. We're not abusive. We're not overbearing. On the contrary, everybody says, all of our relatives say, we let the child get away with too much and we're spoiling him. Spoiled child will swear on a Sefer Torah that his parents are the meanest things that ever sprouted from the ofer ve'efer of this planet. Parents are swearing on the same Sefer Torah that they are spoiling the child, and the child has no gratitude and no appreciation. That's what happens when you spoil a child. You give them an inch and they take a mile. And they bite the hand that feeds them. Now mind you, this happens all the time. All the time. Majority of times, ruba deruba, the instances where the parents claim to have spoiled the child will turn back and say, his or her parents have been so mean to them that they just can't bear a relationship with them. What's pshat? Usually, this is the pshat. Parents have succumbed to a yetzer hara. Yetzer hara is one that says, have your cake and eat it too. Don't punish the child. Don't explicitly punish him. Don't overtly punish him, but make him suffer. Child knows that the parents are so angry at her. Child knows that the parents look down on him for what he did. Child knows, because of the parents' body language and the parents' tone of voice and the parents' attitude towards the child, an unspoken attitude, they have some really negative feelings towards this child. And that hurts the child more than all the smacks of the rod that the parents refuse to administer. And the parents take a look at me and they say, we don't do anything to this child. We let him get away with everything. You know what it's like? It's like when two kids come to the parents, a big fight, and one kid says to the parent, she's bothering me, and she's cheppering me. He says, I didn't touch him, I didn't do anything, the other kid says. No, you didn't do anything, but you gave him a look that teases, and you gave him a nudge that annoys, and you gave him an attitude that infuriates. And of course, children take advantage of their siblings' immaturity, and they know which buttons to push to get their brothers and sisters angry and annoyed, and then they come to the parents, I didn't do anything, look at him. On an adult level, that's exactly what's happening. The parents are telling me, I didn't do anything, and look at this kid. No, you didn't hit him over the head with a stick. But the way you walk and talk and the way you think about the child becomes painfully clear to him that you harbor very, very negative emotions and feelings towards him. Do you know what? This method of inflicting pain cannot even be considered punishment, because you're claiming not to punish the child. Child probably doesn't even know exactly what he's feeling this pain for. If the child only does one thing wrong, and he's good at deductive reasoning, then he'll figure it out. But usually, the relationship between parent and child at this point in time is already so complex, so convoluted, any semblance of order is so discombobulated that it's almost impossible, it's impossible for the child to know what he's paying for, what crime he's getting his kapara for today. This is not punishment, this is called choseich shivtoi. This is hiding the rod. You're not withholding it. This child is getting the pain, but it's covert. It's implicit. It's hidden. It's buried. It's veiled. When this happens, child will invariably develop a seemingly unjustifiable hatred towards his parents. And the parents will have no earthly clue as to why this child is being so cruel to them. For what is the child hurting them back? Why is this child staying out until 5:30 in the morning, knowing full well that their elderly father worries to death about the child's whereabouts, and that the mother who has to wake up early for work in the morning can't go to sleep unless they know where the child is? Why is the child being so cruel? And these are parents that want to have their cake and to eat it too. They want to be able to say, no, we never punished him. No, we spoiled him. Look what he turned out to be. When the truth of the matter is, the pain that this child went through is above and beyond anything that a stickball bat can inflict. Somebody who hides the stickball bat will eventually come to hate his child. And it's no wonder, because the child will eventually come to hate the parents. Yoi havoi, And if you love the child, shicharoi musar, you make the musar clear, black on white. Hello, child, you did this wrong. Therefore, the following is your punishment. Mido keneged mido. They call it logical consequences. We've always had a name for it. It's mido keneged mido. Mefarshim explain why Hashem always punishes mido keneged mido. The reason is, they say, because this way you'll know why you're being punished. If Hashem would mete out random punishments with no regard to any connection with the crime, punishments that have no parallel to the sin committed, then you'll never know why you're being punished. But because Hashem punishes mida keneged mida, it becomes clear to you what the source of the punishment is, what the cause of the punishment is, what the reason for the punishment is, and then you're able to improve. And without the ability to improve, then what good is the punishment? The same thing applies to parents. It has to be very clear to children exactly why they're being punished. And even if you tell them, well, you stayed out late at night, and therefore you're being punished, but the punishment has absolutely nothing to do with the crime, you say, well, since you stayed out late at night, therefore, you're not going to have dessert the next day. Well, at least you told the child what's happening. But as we stated many times before, in order to make an impact on a teenager, or on an adult for that matter, the impact has to be not only intellectual, but it has to be emotional and sensory as well. And so, if you want to punish a child for what he did, besides making it clear to him verbally what he's being punished for, you must try as hard as you can to make the punishment correspond to the crime, not only in terms of avoiding cruel and unusual punishment, not only in terms of overreacting or underreacting, but in terms of matching the punishment to the crime. Mida keneged mida. If the child came home late from his curfew, 2 hours, perhaps you would want to knock 2 hours off the curfew for 2 days next weekend. Or something like that. This way, while the child is sitting home offering the punishment, sinks into his head the crime that he did. And this is a principle known to Mechanchim, that the discipline has to parallel the infraction. Logical consequences. Child drives unsafely, and it makes a lot more sense reduce his driving privileges than it does to take away his plans for Cholamoid. If a child is caught with a indiscretion regarding certain friends that he really should not be associating with, then limiting his freedom of choice regarding where and with whom he goes is a logical consequence. That's called shicharoi musar. You make the musar clear. Musar is obvious, explicit, and very clear to him. Now I want to put in a qualifier here, not to take this further than it's meant. I know a Rebbe in the yeshiva that punished a child who, while waiting on the lunch line in yeshiva, 10-year-old boy, he was waiting on the line to have lunch. He cut into the line, he cut ahead of his turn or something, and then he answered his Rebbe, chutzpah, dick. Rebbe punished him by not allowing him to eat lunch that day. And when the parents called the Rebbe, actually the assistant principal of the school, and asked him about the wisdom of not allowing a child to eat lunch, which is, you could say, his biological right, Rebbe invoked the logical consequences principle. He said, well, the crime, the infraction had to do with lunch. Therefore, the punishment has to do with lunch. To which the parent responded, what would you have done had he cut into the line to go to the bathroom? What would you have prevented him from doing then? Sometimes there are other more overriding concerns, mida kenegen mida, and this is just but one component, one dimension of a parent's decision of what kind of discipline to invoke. But whatever type of discipline a parent decides to employ, one thing has to be certain. Child has to be made painfully aware of what he's being punished for, why he's being punished, and to what extent the punishment goes. And when the punishment is over, that's it. No residue, dirty looks, no leftover hatred in your heart. Because all that does is generate mida kenegen mida, hatred and negative feelings in the heart of the child. And all this is just part of the great principle that teenagers, adolescents, need stability, clarity, focus, and precision more than anything else in their lives, because their greatest enemy is confusion. A confused child is a vulnerable child, vulnerable to the Yetzer Hara, vulnerable to the temptations of society, vulnerable to everything out there that you want to protect your child from. A confused child is a weak child. And I'll give you another example of where children get confused. Not merely a general example, but now we'll go to something very specific. Our children, Morei Rabbeisai, are confused. Particularly our girls. Following particular type of confusion is found more in girls than in boys. And this type of confusion, this little piece of convoluted hashkafa, I've found be more widespread than any other type of confusion among our teenagers. And that is this. We know that certain crimes, certain averis, are more severe than others. There was a man who I know who went to the Rosh Hashiva, it was Rav Hutna Zatzal, and asked him if he should shave his beard, or actually the shaila was, should he grow a beard? The reason why he was reluctant was because it might hinder his business. And Rav Hutna told him as follows. He said, there are certain people who will sacrifice everything, money-wise, time-wise, effort-wise, for a beautiful esrog. And there are words for such a person. You call him a tzaddik, maybe. You call him a chassid. You call him somebody that loves mitzvahs. Then there's somebody who will sacrifice all, time-wise, money-wise, effort-wise, for mayim achroinim. As a word for such a person, shoita. Rav Hutner told this man that the first thing he has to do is decide, is the beard to him like a beautiful esrog or like mayim achroinim. And then we'll be able to discuss how much you ought to sacrifice for it. But the point that's relevant to us is that we all know that the Chazal of Eina Toyeidea Matan Schorin Shal Mitzvahs notwithstanding, there are certain things that are called Ikarim and certain things that are less, I don't want to say important, but less fundamental. We tell our children that in order to be a Frum Yid, it's of paramount importance. Sometimes they're even told that this is the main thing. I'm not saying I agree, but sometimes they're told that. Midas and Masim Toivim. Midas, Bein Odom L'Chaveroi, be a mensch. Chesed, Lashon Hara, not being an Achzori, being a Rachamon, wanting to help somebody, not being selfish. All these wonderful Midas. Without these Midas, you tell the children, all the frum kiten in the world don't mean anything. Okay. Same girl whom we tell this is then castigated and threatened with expulsion from her school for associating with a nice Alice Midas who doesn't speak much Lashon Hara, that will help you, will not talk bad about people, will do you a favor. She doesn't go dressed properly. On the other hand, there are very few girls who are ever told that they're going to be thrown out of school for associating with a friend that's a Balas Gaiva, or a friend that is an Achzori, or a friend that speaks an overabundance of Lashon Hara. So, on one hand, you're telling the child that this is so important, but on the other hand, you're saying that we're enforcing what we said is less important more. It doesn't only affect girls, it affects boys too. A mother called me last week and said that her son came to her with a taina because his Rosh Hashiva told him that if he continues to associate with girls, he's going to have to leave the yeshiva. And his boy tells his mother, "Mother, these bacharim that don't talk to girls, they do things that are a lot worse." The mother doesn't know what to answer. Now this is the male version of the female dilemma, the tznius dilemma that we described before. And our children are confused about this. They see what they perceive to be a double standard, what they perceive to be contradictory messages, colliding values. And what happens is they accept such messages as elu v'elu are worthless. They don't accept anything because in their mind it's inconsistent. There's an answer. I agree with the general school's policies that I described before. But what must be done is it must be explained to the child. It must be explained that the severity of an avera is not always proportionate to the danger it poses to your soul. Meaning, somebody chops off his left arm. It's one Avera. He's not Chayav Karis. He's not Chayav Misa. He gets an Avera. It's Choyvel Ba'atzmai. However, it will affect his future ability to put on tefillin for the rest of his life. As opposed to somebody that's Mechalel Shabbos, which is a much more severe crime, but after you do tshuva for that, after you do straighten out, after you get back on the right path, it's all over. The guy that cut off his hand is still left without a hand. Even after the tshuva, the hands will not grow back. Al pi derech hateva. And it's the same thing many averus. There are certain averus that, because of various reasons, social reasons, yetzer hara reasons, whatever reasons, are very dangerous, are very tempting to a teenage child. And it can schlep them into a black hole out of which kol boyeho lo yeshuvun, a place where it's impossible or very difficult to return from. Doesn't mean that these averas are worse than the others. It means they're more dangerous to you. Remember, you can't shake hands with someone who has the common cold, but you can hug and kiss someone with cancer. Severity of a disease does not always correspond to how contagious it is. And the same thing goes with averus. We put gedorim and siyogim. We put rules and punishments in front of those averus, those indiscretions, those infractions that are most contagious, most infective, most poisonous, not necessarily the most severe. That's what we have to explain. That the girl, that's a balas gaiva. We all know what a balas gaiva is. They're repulsive people. They are annoying people. Yes, one should not associate with anybody that is a rasha, but if that's not the case, then what we have to do is disassociate ourselves from those situations that are most dangerous for us. We're not saying that the girl that goes with a short skirt is committing a worse crime than the girl who's a mushchis in midas. We are saying you stay away from her because to you it's more dangerous. Boy in the yeshiva who has his association with the females, we're not telling him that that's such a terrible avera that it's worse than everything the other bacharim are doing. No! We say that this is something that can affect your entire life. And it can! Something that can affect your entire life. You'd be a different person. Different type of person. Different type of bacha. We ask somebody like that, what are the biggest influences in his life? Well, he'll say maybe his friends, his school, his parents, Efsha, and his girlfriend is for sure going to be in there. It has a tremendous effect on a bacha. How bad is it? That's not the point. The point is how contagious, how poisonous, how infectious is it? In fact, the Gemara says this regarding the Drabonans. The Gemara says that there are certain punishments that are more severe that are given to crimes that are less severe. And the reason is, in order to create a deterrent for doing the crimes, we have to mete out a punishment that's disproportionately strict to the crime. It's a deterrent as opposed to a punishment. It says in the Mefarshim that the... However, all the examples all point in one direction. Confusion, cloudiness, is the worst thing for a teenager. Their questions must be answered. Not just answered hazily, on a surface level, with clarity and with a kenak. And if you don't know how to answer your child's questions, call your Rav. And if your Rav doesn't know how to answer your child's questions, call his Rav. And be Dairish and Choker until you find clear and precise answers to your child's issues. Because questions that are unanswered spell confusion. And confusion spells serious danger. Now, of course, sometimes a question's not made to be a question. We know the story with Reb Chaim Brisker Zatzal. Reb Chaim Brisker once met a former Talmud of his who was no longer frum. And Reb Chaim asked him, what happened? Former Talmud says, I have kashas, questions. Reb Chaim listens to his questions, turns, and walked away. They asked Reb Chaim, how come you didn't answer his questions? Certainly, a man like you is able to. Which Reb Chaim responded, those things that he asked, they weren't kashas. They were terutzim. They were answers. They were answers to his behavior, excuses. They were not questions. You can only answer a kasha. You can't answer a teretz. Sometimes teenagers will ask hashkofa questions only to be able to say, well, I asked the questions. Nobody gave me a satisfactory answer. They'll ask the questions, and no matter what answer you give them, they'll reject it, and the only thing you accomplished is that you now gave them a pischen peh. You gave them the excuse to say, yeah, Yiddishkeit, I heard all about it. In such a case, don't bother answering. But usually, that's not the case. Usually our children are innocent, inquisitive and curious, and they really want answers. And if they don't get the answers from us, they're going to get the answers from the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara may not come up with the right answers, but the answers will be unfortunately satisfying and acceptable in the absence real terutzim. Now at this point we're going to take questions. There are no questions this evening, so everybody have a good night and thank you for coming.